Open up your hearts. Open up your minds. Open up your chests and your stomachs and your intestines, because gods are here. Gods are inside of you, and you are inside of gods. Let's all get inside of each other with a new episode of American Godcast. I'm Alex.
Normally, I speak on my godhead and godhood, but Alex just sort of freaked me out with his sexual, sort of sexual talk.
Yeah, well, you know.
I'm a little off my god game now. I feel like I was going to say something about video games and Pong and how that's like sort of the new altar
I guess I worship at.
Could have
gone with that instead.
Yeah, okay, but you went with sort of a sex thing. That's fine.
Yeah, well, no, there was, you know, the episode was like 50-50.
Silence! I'm Justin.
And you are listening to American Godcast, an American Gods podcast. We're going to be talking about the fourth episode of the second season. I think I got that right. Fourth episode, right? The greatest story ever told. And oh boy, do we have a story to tell you.
That's a cocky name for an episode.
It is.
That's really confident.
Well, what did you think about this episode, though?
I like this episode a lot. This is the first episode where it felt like we got to really be inside the new gods a little bit more. And that's been fun. We talked a lot about how the previous season we really liked the stories of the old gods. And we're missing that this season. And then we get a little bit of that sort of a... It's not a direct origin of one of the new gods, but it's sort of... A backstory on Technical Boy's biggest worshiper or most powerful worshiper.
Yeah, the structure of this episode, as well as the way it was shot, to me felt the closest to getting towards a season one episode.
And you're dying for that. You're a real season one American Gods
purist,
dude.
Yes, yeah. I worship season one. Season two, I'm like, maybe I'll go occasional Sundays.
You're an old season. You're on the old side of old season. I'm on the side of new season.
Are you really?
Yeah, I've been liking this episode especially. I thought this felt like I could see this episode as a template for a series like this that would run for many, many seasons.
Interesting.
Because it does feel like American Gods as a show is heading toward a big conflict and then sort of ends. Like
right.
But the way this episode was structured and played out, I feel like this could be an ongoing drama I could see for many, many seasons.
To that point, I'm still having a very difficult time weaving the real world stuff out of the show stuff when I'm watching this and kind of trying to parse, like, okay, is this the reason that everybody left? Well, what are they figuring out there? Certainly, they're doing a lot of on-screen figuring out with the new media character what that means, how that works, etc., which feels a little creaky to me. But to your point, we talked about this last episode, they renewed American Gods for a third season, but didn't say a third and final season, which I believe was the original plan.
Yeah.
So I think what Starz wants to happen is, cool, let's keep this going forever. This is great. We have no hits.
Yeah.
We've got Outlander. That's it. Let's do this show. We're all in. And it seems like Neil Gaiman, at least, is like, yep, I'm on board. Great, let's do whatever. He's all in on TV now.
Yeah.
But my guess, particularly based on this episode, is that Brian Fuller and Michael Green were like, no, we want to concentrate on this three-season plan. This is what we want to do. We're going to stick with it. And that didn't gel with what was going on behind the scenes.
That's a fight. That's a classic old god, new god fight. It's money versus creatives.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, that's crazy when you think about it. And a lot of that does play out on screen. To give you guys the recap of what has happened so far, there's a god named Mr. Wednesday. He's actually Odin. He's traveling around America, repping the old gods, starting this war with the new gods, who are led by a guy named Mr. World, played by Crispin Glover. And Mr. World has two lieutenants. He has Technical Boy, and he has now New Media. New Media and Technical Boy, a lot of crossover there.
Yeah, a little too close for comfort.
Right, and that's playing out on screen. They're trying to figure each other out, who is in charge, who exists, who has a right to exist, and Technical Boy has been really fucking up. He messed up this deal with Argus. Argus died last episode, or I guess temporarily died, and will probably come back at some point later in some other form.
Taken off the board. Argus, which is the all-seeing eye, I guess, technically.
Right.
That has all the information, and Wednesday sent Laura Moon in and iced him to the neck.
Now, Laura Moon is the dead wife of Shadow Moon, who is Mr. Wednesday's driver. Laura doesn't appear at all this episode, so forget I ever said anything.
And Matt Sweeney,
Yeah, don't even know who that is. Yeah. I have no idea. But Shadow Moon is just a regular dude, or is he?
Interesting.
That's what he's trying to figure out. Why Mr. Wednesday is so interested in him, why all these gods are so interested in him. That definitely comes to play in this episode. And what else do you need to know? Oh, the other thing you need to know is Shadow, after getting into a train crash, stumbled his way over to the mortuary of Monsieur Jaquel and Mr. Ibis.
Yeah.
And he was told he was going to have a good night's sleep there.
Oh, he did.
But did he sleep? I don't think so.
Yeah, dude.
He and the other gods that you should probably know about this episode, there's Bilquis, who temporarily was working with Mr. World, even though she's an old sex god. And Mr. Nancy, a.k.a. Anansi, who is the trickster story spider god from Africa, played by Orlando Jones.
Yeah.
And now we get into it. Yeah. It doesn't actually start off with any of our main characters. It starts off, as you mentioned, with a flashback, a story, which I loved.
Yeah, this is great. I feel like this is such a thing that modern peak TV shows do, is just start telling a story with the characters you don't know about, and only later do you find out how it weaves into the overarching narrative. This was a fun one. It's a kid who's like playing Pong, playing piano, playing Pong. Classic new stuff versus old stuff.
This is literally what my daughter does. She does this all the time. She's like,
you should update your game system.
No, I don't think so.
You're starting her at Pong. Yeah.
Yeah, we're good. No, it's actually not game system. It's reading, which is a totally fine thing, which you'll get like super engrossed in a book. And we'll say, hey, you have to practice your violin. Hey, you have to practice your violin. She's like, what? Runs into the other room, practices violin in like 5 minutes, comes back, and she's back to reading.
Wow.
So I really felt this sequence.
Man, she is like just, those are both good things.
It's great.
Which one's her vice? Reading?
Vice is her reading. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
What a nightmare.
It's the worst. The kids never have them. So this kid is going back and forth between game systems and music. His father loves and worships music, loves and worships Bach, and he worships computers, the sun. At college, he figures out a way to meld the two, creates essentially an early AI computer program that is able to generate its own music. His father loves it. Well, he loves it, and then he finds out it's in a computer, and you can see his heart falling.
This was such a great, I mean, this is what, like 5-7 minutes of the episode, and it was such just a great like little short story thing where the father wants his son to be interested in classical music, and he's a great pianist, but he pursues a career in computers, and then he melds. He has like this moment of inspirational moment, and he combines the two. And the father's so excited, and then he finds out a computer wrote it. He is, like you said, absolutely heartbroken.
Yeah. And then he dies. The next thing that we see happens is the father dies. They're at the funeral. The music is playing, the music that was composed by this computer, and it summons Technical Boy. It's a little unclear whether this is the first time we've seen Technical Boy. My guess, having watched through the whole episode, is no.
No.
This is essentially summoning him. They're worshiping Technical Boy. He comes to this funeral, appears in front of the boy. Everybody is taken over by EDM, dance music, and beats.
Yeah.
It starts rocking out a little bit at that funeral. That was great. I love that sequence.
So good. And I want a party funeral. You know, I want to have a real, like, yeah.
We should mention our third co-host, Pete, is feeling pretty sick. So what do you think? Would he want a party funeral if he dies from this throwing up right now?
He wants to be laid to rest and have the wake at the subway below the theater that we record our podcast in.
Yeah.
It's where he feels most comfortable.
Yeah, they close that subway, but he still goes there every day and comes back with food, which is
still
very upsetting.
Smells like old meatballs, which is what Pete loves about Subway, apparently.
So. That's gross. So moving into the episode, though, then we cut forward to Shadow Moon, who is sleeping, or rather not sleeping, because he fucks a cat.
He fucks a cat, which we all saw coming.
Yeah, that's one way of getting pussy.
Alex,
what?
Oh, man, that is true, Alex.
Yes.
That is 100% true.
Yes, it's accurate.
And like they always say, if you want to fuck the cat, you're going to get scratched. So to give you a little more backstory here, Shadow Moon is having sex with a strange woman.
Right.
Above a funeral home, as you do.
Yeah.
And then it gets crazy. She starts licking the wounds, scab licking.
Yep.
Classic fetish. And then he wakes up and it's a cat.
Now, it's been a while since I read the book. I feel like I vaguely remember this as almost like the melding of two different scenes, because doesn't... we talked about this last season, and I know people who listened to the podcast corrected us or not, but Soria, sort of that three god, that three Russian god,
yeah.
I thought he had sex with her on the roof, and that's kind of what this scene was, like she snuck into his room,
yeah,
not a cat god, which is what this is. So I think it's kind of the melding of two different things, but I could be totally wrong, because again, it's been a couple of years since I read the book.
Yeah, I think he has sex with the cat in the book, too.
All right, great. He has sex with the moon. He has sex with a cat.
Yeah.
He's having a good time.
Busy. When you're hanging with the gods, you're hanging and banging. He's loose. He's cut loose. He's out there. His wife died. Let a player play.
Yeah, let him hang and bang.
Let him hang and bang. Then we get a very graphic autopsy, which
yes.
I did not enjoy that.
No?
It was very graphic. I don't know. I'm not usually affected by seeing something like that, but this one I was just not happy about.
This was... I was okay with it, but I think if I was to venture a guess, it was that it wasn't actually gross. It was just technical, you know, like it wasn't blood spurting everywhere. No. So it was fun or anything like that. It was literally just Monsieur Jacquel is the one, right? Peeling back this woman's skin, getting below it and then sewing her back up eventually, I guess.
Maybe it's just so close to the sex scene where I was like... Just juxtaposing those two things.
And that's probably purposeful,
No, it was very effective because it was unsettling.
Yeah.
Talking about the nature of death, Wednesday shows up, and he's like, don't tell him where his wife is.
Right. Shadow Moon, of course, not realizing that Mr. Wednesday is right behind him, telling him, no, don't say anything about that.
Yeah.
But he does turn out to be super refreshed because of his cat sex. Good hot tip for anybody. If you want a good night's sleep, have sex with a cat, right?
A lot of Olympic athletes do that before
really?
The big, yes,
it's really?
A, the Olympic Village is rife with sex, cat sex.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, you're right.
Somebody should do something about that. Moving on, though, after that, they get into a car and they head to a Motel America diner, which is staffed by Kali, the destroyer god.
Yeah.
That was fun. I really enjoyed that scene a lot. They go through this whole speech. Mr. Wednesday tries to explain that they're there to see money, to recruit money to their side.
He literally breaks down what money is, which I found informative.
Yeah, I've been crumpling it up and throwing it in the gutter.
Yeah, exactly. I've been just carrying gold whenever I want something.
Right.
So it's great to realize that paper takes the place of money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and if I wanted a salt shaker.
Well, can we jump ahead a little bit?
Yeah.
I mean, to talk about this money thing, just because we're starting to get on this particular thread. So the short version of this plot line is they're trying to get money on their side. Money comes in as a bunch of Girl Scouts, essentially. Turns out Shadow Moon has absolutely no identifying characteristics whatsoever.
No credit.
So money gets super upset about that. They manage to power through that anyway. And by the end, Mr. World, Mr. Wednesday, and Money, who is William Sanderson?
Yes.
Is that right?
Who I know as the voice actor from the Batman, the animated series, two-part episode, called, I think, His Silicon Soul is what it is. When it's when they do the robot clones.
Uh-huh.
One of my favorite Batman the Animated Series episodes.
Huh.
He played the guy that ran the factory. I think his name is Rossum or something like that.
Oh, sure.
Great. And this actor pops up in a lot of things, and he's great.
Yeah, that's, he was definitely one of those faces where I was like, no, I know that guy. Wait, it's not that guy. It's not that guy. Which guy is it? So they have this meeting, and they talk about whether money is going to come over to their side. Mr. Wednesday gives a very impassioned plea. Mr. World is like, I don't care. Do whatever you want. And ultimately, money decides not to choose a side, which is good for Mr. World. But the reason I wanted to kind of run through this quickly is get a sense from you what your take on money in society is, which I know obviously is a big...
Okay, no problem. It's bullshit, man. We got to take it down. Bitcoin, throw out the system. Thunderdome.
I guess what I mean by it is that I felt like when Mr. World brings up the point where he's like, money isn't paper, you idiot. It's all ones and zeros. I was like, oh, yeah, right. Okay, none of this matters. This money, whatever this money is, clearly seems like a very old money type guy.
Yeah, Larry King. He looks like Larry King.
He looks like Larry King, exactly. He throws down a bunch of change and crumpled up dollar bills at the end of the thing. So to me, it almost felt like the new gods, they already have money. Like, they don't need this. Whatever that Mr. Wednesday is actually backing the wrong horse there was my take on things.
My takeaway, first off, I really liked the Girl Scouts as a way of showing what money is. Like, sort of the youngest, when you're growing up and you, like, learn about money, Girl Scouts are such a, like, transactional, like, lesson in what money is. I thought that was cool. And then I think, first off, I think Mr. Wednesday's always playing Shadow. At the top of the scene with the Girl Scouts, he's basically saying Shadow's worthless because he doesn't have any credit.
Right.
And I think he's just prepping him. Everything is just a con on Shadow to make him more and more vulnerable to what Wednesday wants him to do.
Right. And he's clearly tricking him this episode. I mean, I think we could talk a little freely now that Pete's not here since he hasn't read the book. But it's pretty clear that what Mr. Wednesday is doing when he tells, when it's revealed that Shadow has no identifying characteristics whatsoever, that's a pretty big tell. Like, that's somebody that he needs, that's something that he wants. And also, when he completely negs Shadow Moon and says, "You're worthless, nobody cares about you, nobody living or dead, as far as I'm aware," is the line, which is ludicrous because Shadow knows that Laura Moon is literally dead and is coming after him constantly.
And he also knows that Wednesday needs him.
Right.
Because there's no reason he would keep him around so much. So I thought that was a great exchange. And, I mean, we do know some of what happens because we have read the book. But this was such a good episode to set that up. Because Wednesday's keeping Shadow. Shadow exists outside of this game of old gods versus new gods. So that's important for him. So he's keeping him still off the table so that he can use him as a weapon later on, I think. And I think, while it seems like Wednesday makes a mistake with money, what I think Wednesday was actually doing here was getting money off the table for either side.
Oh, okay.
Because it seemed like he was pleading and just didn't do a good job, and Mr. World is so confident. But I think when money walks away, that's it. Money's a powerful...
You don't think there's a new money?
I don't think so, because what Mr. World says is money is ones and zeros. Like, old money versus new money doesn't matter, I think, in this.
Right.
Money's just the abstract concept, and right. Now it's out.
Okay. I mean, I guess I could see that. The other interesting thing that happens at that end of that scene is Mr. World says, "I am not your enemy," to Mr. Wednesday. And they've even kind of had this horrible team up in season one, so we know that they're not totally against each other. But the question then is, if Mr. World is not Mr. Wednesday's enemy, who is Mr. Wednesday's enemy?
Well, I think Wednesday's enemy is just being out of touch, losing worshipers and just dying off. So I think that's why Mr. World isn't his enemy. They all have the same enemy, which is like just loss of
time.
Yeah. Right. Us too.
Oh, geez. No, we're going to do this forever.
Yeah. But I'll still fight all of the old versions of us.
Yeah.
Because we're the young ones, right?
Yeah. I think so.
We're the new podcast hosts.
Yep.
We got to take down those old podcast hosts, Mark Maron.
Oh, Jesus. What the fuck, that guy?
Yeah, he's our Odin.
Yeah. Mark Maron, if you ever want to do our podcast, just let us know.
Please, we'd love to have you.
Oh, my God, that would be really big for us.
That would be so cool.
That would be a huge thing. We don't want to turn that down.
You're like our money.
We should go and find him in a diner.
Yeah.
He'd like that.
He'd love that. He loves eating out.
Yeah.
So I think how that plays out and what value this war is in helping them get more worshipers, I don't know.
Right. One other note that I wanted to mention about this, beyond all of the Shadow Moon stuff, on the this episode was on a better level for me than the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Crispin Glover and Ian McShane, they're both amazing actors.
Yeah.
Every time they walk in, they make the scene better. Like, Crispin Glover is so purposely weird and shy.
That's literally his thing.
That's literally his
in
thing.
In every aspect of
his
life.
It's so intensely weird, and Ian McShane is so casually intense that putting them in a scene together elevates everything. And the fact that they were all over this episode, I do feel like Technical Boy is far less dangerous than he was in the previous season, because they're using him a lot more. Granted, we'll get to this in a moment, but it seems like he's done, at least for the time being.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the same power as Crispin Glover walking into a scene. You know, yeah. it makes it
from an acting point of view.
From an acting point of view, but I also think what worked about the first season of the show is that it did feel very ethereal. It felt like it was on another level. It felt like it was a dream you were watching a lot of the time.
Right.
And a lot of this season so far feels like I'm watching a TV show.
Right.
But when Crispin Glover comes in, that changes it exponentially.
Right.
That's all.
No, I agree with you. Should we jump back and talk about, you want to do Bilquis, Mr. Nancy?
Yeah, let's do it.
Monsieur Jekyll. The woman that Monsieur Jekyll is conducting the autopsy on, her funeral happens, and there's only one person there, which is sort of sad.
Yeah.
But Bilquis comes, and then Mr. Nancy comes, and they get into just a discussion about... there's a discussion about this woman's life that Bilquis is sort of having this dialogue and pushing back on the fact that she's a Christian, sort of shitting on Jesus, like, what's he ever done for you kind of stuff. And by the end of that, in this episode, it feels like this woman is becoming a worshiper of Bilquis, which...
It's interesting to me. I mean, to loop back to the I'm not your enemy thing, this is definitely not what happens in the book. But we touched on Jesus a couple of times in this show, right?
Yeah.
It hasn't necessarily seemed to be a thing, but this episode we had the discussion with Bilquis and the woman. What's her name? Ella Goodchild or something like that?
Yeah, later introduces Mrs. Goodchild.
Right. They're very aggressively talking about, why do you worship Jesus? Why are you into Jesus? And Technical Boy, one of the last things he does is he puts himself up as the cross and, I believe, quotes Jesus.
Yeah.
It's not a big part of the book at all, because it is really between these very ancient old gods and the new gods of technology. But it would be interesting if Jesus is... nobody take offense to this, but the ultimate enemy here, because clearly Christianity, Catholicism is the number one worship in America other than technology.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a threat to the old gods, it's Jesus. It's not really technology, right?
Well, but I guess also though, Jesus is the old god that sort of figured it out,
right?
Has kept, stayed relevant through all this. As these other gods are falling away, Jesus is like strong.
Yeah. So. I just want to see them kick the shit out of Jesus. That's all.
And I agree with you. It is weird that they glanced on that in the first season, and then that's not the main thrust of it. But I feel like they just don't want to have a show where it's like, let's kill Jesus.
Right.
So that's just the nature of it.
I wish they would almost avoid it entirely. I understand that's a weird thematic thing to do, because they are trying to say relevant things about religion. But to your point, there's nothing fun about that. Like, it's way more fun to watch Odin... go up against technology than it is for Odin and technology to team up to kill Jesus.
Maybe that's the end of the season. It's just Jesus like, I'm next.
Comes out with two guns.
Exactly. Sweet. And he just lights up the room. The other side of this Mr. Nancy, Bilquis, and Jekyll stuff is they sitting in the funeral parlor have this great conversation about race and what it means to be black in America. And man, Mr. Nancy's speech is so good.
Yeah, it's Orlando Jones gave this slave ship monologue in season one. I believe it was the second or third episode of season one. That is one of the high water points of the episode series.
Yeah.
So this felt like a return to that. It's not quite as strong, but the way the scene was filmed and the way the scene was played, it built so well.
Yeah.
It was so good. Orlando Jones is sitting in a chair the entire time and just builds an intensity over the course of it. And one of the final shots where he's talking and yelling at them and saying, Soria died, but if it was a black god, nothing.
Yeah.
Chernobog would not raise his hammer even one bit. And defining what slaves are, defining who they are, and talking about, we have three black gods in the same room, why aren't we doing something about this? They hold on that camera angle far away, Orlando Jones sitting in the chair, Bilquis right in the center, Monsieur Jekyll kind of peeking out from behind her, sort of shifting around a little bit.
Yeah.
It was so interesting. It was
really
cool. So good, and it really helped build the power of that monologue as well.
And I also like, first off, they talked about some like things going on in the world right now. Like he mentioned the rebranding of the alt-right and stuff. Like
yeah.
It felt just very present and of the moment in a great way.
Not to keep going behind the scenes, but the rumor was that Orlando Jones came in and was rewriting a lot of stuff on the fly on the set. To me, it almost felt like that was a scene that he probably rewrote.
That's while we were watching it, I was thinking that exact same thing.
Yeah.
And then Bilquis seems to change sides right then and there. His speech, like, made her come back to the old god side.
She was wavering anyway. I mean, that's what the episode is. They ask her, why have you been wandering around? You've been flitting from place to place. But she owns up to the fact that she saw Sarya die. That kind of turned her around. This is something where she could completely actually be eliminated in the middle of this war. And to your point, Mr. Nazi, they kiss. Monsieur Jacquel is like,
I need a drink.
Oh, I need a drink.
I'm going to go fuck a cat.
He probably fucks that cat all the time. It's just hanging around.
Which is, I mean, maybe they're like a thing.
Yeah.
That's why I like Shadow and the cat. It's a little weird.
Oh, man. Are we getting a classic love triangle going on here?
Yeah. Those two dudes and the cat.
It's like Heathcliff.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of that's the
Wasn't
plot.
That the plot of...
A lot of that revolved around a human that was kept trying to have sex with Heathcliff.
It was like how Gargamel kept trying to have sex with the Smurfs, right?
Yeah, or Garfield, Odie, and John was this weird sexual triangle.
All I'm saying is, guys, if you're listening, go back and check out your old cartoons. There's a lot more going on there.
Exactly. There's nothing you can take away is us ruining those things for you.
Yes. So they all team up, get together. That's great. I'm glad to see that. It definitely focuses up the Bilquis storyline quite a bit, which is nice. And then there's the last part of the episode, which is the Technical Boy stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
So Technical Boy, you mentioned this earlier, but it ends up looping back to that kid that we saw at the beginning of the episode. They knew something new instead of Argus. This dude has set up a massive corporation, and he goes and finds him. He's much older now, no longer playing gay boys, and wants to recruit him to the side of the new gods.
Yeah, to sort of take the place of Argus, since he has so much. It seems like he is like maybe it's like an Apple type company, he's in everyone's technology, so he can watch them in the same way that Argus was going to.
Right,
and pretty cool to be rich and successful enough that gods show up.
He seemed pretty cash about it, to be honest. Like, I mean, maybe the point there is if he is a Steve Jobs type figure, you do feel like you're close enough to being a god that you're like, oh, there's God. Nice. Glad to see you again. Cool.
I think I have a 4:30 with Jesus, so this is going to have to be quick, Technical Boy.
It'll also be interesting because just kind of very quickly skip through what happens in the storyline. Technical Boy tries to recruit him. It really doesn't work. He's clearly not turning him to his side. He's being a total dick about it as usual. Mr. World comes in, gives the dude this code. He's completely entranced and forgets the Technical Boy is there. The Technical Boy gets one of those face grabber things that got on Shadow Moon in season one and is taken off of the board.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, given that, are we going to be dealing with privacy issues or anything going forward? I think that would be an interesting thing to talk about potentially.
And that's what I liked about this episode and a larger idea of the series is like, if this is a show that, treated all of our modern issues as gods and goddesses, then yes, an episode about privacy. It's sort of like Black Mirror, but from a more mythological standpoint.
Yeah, I could see that. One thing I'm not 100% sure about, do you think they apply a filter to Mr. World? Because when Mr. World walked into that scene, it looked like he was a little grayer and he was a little grainier than everything else.
Yeah, I think he's made to look like, I don't know, the cover of the Nighthawk painting.
Yeah.
Like he's like a little blurry. He's got like a top coat, the hat pulled down. He feels like he's like 1950s Americana.
Yeah. I hadn't necessarily noticed it in previous scenes, but him being in that white stark background, I thought it was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it's cool. I think they do a lot of like subtle tricks with the way they make the show that I think is really cool.
Now, how do you feel about this move? With Technical Boy taken off, it's just Mr. World, it's just new media. How are you feeling about that team up?
Just like me and my Instagram, I don't need anything else. I'll take on everybody.
What's your Insta again?
JT Sizzler.
Oh, nice. How often do you update that?
Not very often. So great follow if you want to have.
I got to tell you, that's one of. There's plenty of social media that I don't update frequently, but Instagram is the one where I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't do more here.
Yeah. Thank you for apologizing. I think we, your followers, are. We've been talking a lot.
No, I get a fair amount of followers always signing up, and I'm like, I basically just post pictures of chips. That's pretty much it. If I see some weird chips, that's what I post, and I'm not going to put any more effort into this. I'm really sorry.
That's fine. I feel like the chip heads are there for you.
Yeah.
I thought, well, we were talking about sort of the crossover between New Media and Technical Boy, and it sort of makes sense to eliminate one of them. And you in this, the dude, the kid that we met with the pianist, he felt to me like Technical Boy's most powerful follower or worshiper. And so when he gets charmed over to Mr. World New Media's side by like looking at the algorithm or whatever that was that they showed him, he loses, Technical Boy loses his most powerful chip, and so he's vulnerable enough that Mr. World just ices him out.
And it definitely streamlines the show. Like, it's clear what New Media is. It's clear now what Mr. World is, that he's all the rest of technology. Technical Boy was this thing that it always felt like, I don't know what his place is. What exactly is he doing here? So there's certainly a bit of business going on in the show in terms of making everything simpler, but we'll also see, I guess, if he comes back at some point.
Yeah, to be a technical man.
Ooh.
Time to grow up.
Technically a man.
Yeah, just like us.
Yes. Anything else we should talk about with this episode?
I think that's it. Like I said, man, this is I really like this episode a lot. And what do we have, six more episodes.
So hopefully this is pointing that it's going in the right direction. It felt like there was more visual flair this episode.
Yeah.
There's definitely a depth in terms of the speech that was going on. We did spend a lot of time on the car, which I know Pete's favorite thing. But
they did say, they did get in the car, and he did call the car Betty.
Yes.
So Pete's going to really love that.
Oh, man. I hope he survives. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
If not, which one of us should go to his funeral?
He only wants one person.
Just
there.
One.
Why don't you go? I find the smell of Subway to be really revolting.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I got to update my Insta.
Yeah, it would be great. A funeral shot. Maybe chips at the funeral.
Oh, I'll spread some chips over his body.
He'll love that.
Yeah, I really hope he doesn't die. I'm going to feel really bad about this podcast.
Well, then we'll have to do this, what we just said.
Oh, man. That'd be great. Rip Pete. Who deserves your worship the most this episode?
Tough. I mean, I got a... Mr. Nancy, I think, based on that speech alone, that was just great. Really loved it. And then a second shout out to the Elon Musk kid who grew up in... I'll worship that corporation.
Oh, why not? I'll buy all their stuff. I'm going to say Mr. World in this episode. Man, I just loved having the good old creepy Mr. World, Crispin Glover, back. Him shoving his fingers into Technical Boy's eyes and just seeing the pixels rotating around it. Super creepy.
Very cool.
Love that.
Yeah. Are you still thinking... are you more on the side of the New Gods now or less?
I think they're good. I'm on the side of the New Gods. I feel like I was totally sold by Mr. World saying, I'm not your enemy.
Yeah, I agree. The New Gods are more interesting, and I think that Wednesday doesn't give a fuck about the Old Gods either.
Oh, no. He only wants his... Don't they say this at a certain point in his episode, that he's only out for his own survival, and that's it?
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by and we'll worship you. What else do you want to plug?
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And we'll see you at the subway below the...
Yes.
For Pete's funeral.
Worship at our old meatball place.